You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm so excited to be here today. And I'm here joined again with Jason Augustus, because Jason being here on the front lines along with our other party comrades, going out there, facing down the Uden Press and engaging with our local communities. So I wanted to be able to have him on to talk a little bit about what we did just yesterday. You know, movements move and actors act, and it's all about going out there and directly engaging our community, using the media when we can to be able to get our message out there. But what's most important is our own media. That's what shows like this are, to be able to get our message directly out there to our folk without any editing, without any censoring, without any cuts, as we know that the press likes to do. But more importantly than anything, directly engaging with our community. So, first of all, Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Matt.
You're doing great?
Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you here again. And just a side note, I want to do, before we really get into things, I want to do a little promo. Looks like I'm going to be here with Dr. Matt Johnson tomorrow, Sven on Thursday, and Friday, what we're looking towards is I'm going to be doing an interview with Commander Jeff Scoop of the National Socialist Movement. And I want to talk about that just for a second, because you know, Jeff Scoop is a veteran who has been in this movement as long as I have been alive. And you know, the average time someone's in the movement, unfortunately, historically, is usually between 1 to 2 years. And I think that's one of the failures of our movement, of not properly engaging our membership and having this clear vision of what we're fighting for. But Jeff Scoop has been a man that has been unabashedly a National Socialist and has been fighting for his people since he was a teenager and continuing on. And now, you know, we've really strove to work together. And there's a rally coming up in Harrisburg on the 5th of November. So remember the 5th of November. For any of my my Catholic friends, if you want to come out, you can actually wear a Guy Fawkes mask and actually wear it appropriately, you know, if you want to reinstitute an authoritarian Christian regime instead of democracy. But we're going to be having a rally. We're going to go out and support. I'm going to be speaking at the National Socialist Movement rally in Harrisburg on the 5th. And they've got a really, really exciting thing that's going forward. And of course, we've discussed, and actually, before we jump to Beattyville, Jason, I want to talk to you about this. The idea of the Nationalist Front. So we've talked about it before, but now we're coming closer to the date. The website's almost launched, so I think we can begin to talk a little bit about it. Jeff Scoop actually led the way with the creation of the Aryan Nationalist Alliance, the idea that pro-white organizations for so long have been divided, and in many cases needlessly. It's either on subculture, religion, or class, and that's just an abysmal failure because you know, our strength is dissipated. There are tens of thousands of active street nationalists. There are millions of us in the country, but tens of thousands of us who actively hit the streets, go to rallies, go to events, but we've been divided for so long. So Jeff Scoop of the Aryan Nationalist Alliance said that it's time to put all of that aside. If there's beefs from the past, time to forget about that. It's time to be forward-thinking. It's time to be united. And, you know, he invited us to be participants. And, you know, we really talked. And, again, Jeff is dedicated to victory and to our people. And so are so many of the other leaders of organizations that are involved. And we decided that we were going to go ahead and rename the Alliance to the Nationalist Front. Jason has actually done an amazing amount of graphic work that's going to be going up, and we've adopted a constitution for the first time, really, in American white nationalist history, to have a clear set of principles and objectives. The New Orleans Protocol, of course, a little over a decade ago, very important to set basic ground rules, and that's kind of a building block, but we really need to be able to have clear objectives of what we're doing together. You know, unity is great, but unity has to be focused towards action. It has to be focused towards accomplishing specific things, and that's what we're doing. So the Nationalist Front is going to be holding its first press conference the night before the rally, so it's going to be November 4th. Really excited about that, and it's going to be officially unveiled on the 5th. It's going to be really, really exciting. So Jason, why don't we just talk a little bit about what you think. We've discussed it before, but I think it's such an important point to keep hitting, because movement unity and shared purpose and forward motion, so crucial. So what do you think about the where things are going? You saw the alliance proposed, of course. We were talking about that, about the Traditionalist Worker Party getting involved, and kind of how things have evolved and grown. So where do you see things standing with that?
I see things moving forward in the way that they need to be moving forward. Like you said, it's really, it's crucial. It's not important. It needs to happen. Mm-hmm. We really, really have to put aside all this petty nonsense that's had us divided for so long. It has to be done.
Well, exactly. And it's the sort of thing that coming together is a really, really crucial element of this. And then this shared purpose and, designing, you've designed our logo for the Nationalist Front. And something that we talked about with a lot of the people that are involved is, there are subcultural differences. So, debates on symbols and things like that. Well, this more looks like one of these group symbols, and we want to be able to have it so everyone can be united on principle. So one of the things is we want to be flying the Celtic Cross flag, because the Celtic Cross, of course, is used by every European nationalist movement to show solidarity with other European nationalists. It's this nationalist symbol from around the world that everyone can see. But then also you've designed another logo. Do you want to talk a little bit about the logo you've designed?
The logo I designed, it's not catered towards any particular group. It's not catered towards any particular ideology. It's just something that we can all sort of identify with. It's something familiar to all of us, regardless of what group affiliation you have. And it's something that we can really all come under together and, be proud of.
Exactly. And it looks good. It's an NF, very kind of similar to the National Front's logo from Britain. I think it's a very good symbol. Luckily, our the letters match up. And then the 14 stars around it, which, of course, represent the 14 words. And our motto in Latin is United We Stand. And it's such an important thing. And what we need to understand is with an alliance, because, of course, we need to be able to deal, unfortunately, things like ego, subcultural differences can get involved, in any, whether it's you're working in an office and you've got a team, or in politics. We want to be able to have this organization to have this umbrella where no matter who you are as a white nationalist, whether you are a member of an organization, whatever subculture it's a part of, or if you're just an individual that wants to see a united movement, this is something where, to make forward motion for the Nationalist Front doesn't mean you're dismissing anything about whatever group you're a part of. It's just this forward motion for the movement. And if we're all equally invested in this, there is no, the victory for the Nationalist Front is going to be a victory for everybody. So it's something that everybody can get on board with. And that's so important that we can all be equally invested. The time is now, as nationalism is growing, not only in the United States, but in Europe and around the world, for us to actually stand together, to have leaders of organizations working together, to have membership working together. I mean, you've already been approached by people that are involved in different groups when it comes to things like music and graphic design. So, we've got amazing teams here in the Traditionalist Worker Party. Absolutely some of the best men and women I've ever had the ability to meet, both the United States and Europe, best of the best. But there's so many other talented individuals in different groups doing great work. But, you've been approached, Jason, about collaborating on different projects. And it's really, I think, been an exciting thing. Do you want to talk a little bit about the possibility of collaboration, musically, graphically, things like that, to make our movement stronger?
Well, that's a great thing about the Nationalist Front is, it's not affiliated with any particular group because it's all groups. So that makes collaboration a lot easier with people that are even just individuals that are not a part of any group that you could definitely fall under. It makes getting content out there easier as far as multimedia goes, as far as music goes, videos, all of that just, it comes together under that because, as you said, there's no division and nobody's ego can possibly be hurt by it because it's all it is a symbol of united against our foes in this struggle.
It's such an important thing and it's really exciting. So for everyone, stay tuned. The website will be up soon in preparation for the rally. We're going to be having a press conference where myself and Commander Scoop are going to sit down. You're going to get a little preview of things hearing from Commander Scoop on the show that we're going to record this week. And it looks like we're going to be airing that on Friday. It's going to be a really exciting thing. And anyone who is in the area of Harrisburg, I would encourage you, come out to the rally. You know, come out and support. We're going to have various organizations, including the Traditionalist Worker Party there. The NSM personally has a very exciting announcement. I'm not going to steal the thunder from that, but it's a really exciting announcement that I think a lot in the movement are going to be excited to see, and it's going to promote more cooperation amongst our organizations. And, you know, all thanks to Jack Coop with really starting the ball rolling and investing so much time and energy in building this alliance and working with us. So it's a great thing. The movement is coming together. And, you know, let's make a stand on November 5th and beyond November 5th. You know, 2016 was the best current year ever. 2017 is going to be even better. So I encourage everyone, mark your calendars, November 5th, be there in Harrisburg, and let's go out and take a stand. And, you know, this kind of segues into the other conversation. So we had Sky News with us yesterday, as our listeners on the show heard. And, you know, they showed us here. We got to chit-chat here, you know, on the old homestead, you know, packing new member packets. So for any of our brand new members that haven't gotten their member packets yet, we literally packed them yesterday, and there's video evidence for that. And that'll be in the mail very, very soon. But then they went with us to engage one of our communities we've really invested in a lot, and that's Beattyville, Kentucky. We've talked about it before, but you know, focusing our party's efforts in Beattyville is really, really important. It's the fifth poorest town in America. It's almost all white, and it's been completely devastated by globalist policies. A lot of the factories have closed. A lot of local coal mines have closed or reduced their staff, you know, by a huge amount. So unemployment is very high, and there's a lot of social ills and problems. And the economy that's left there, there's a lot of tourism, and I would encourage you, if you want to go and enjoy some of the most beautiful mountains you'll ever see, you know, have a great time in the great outdoors, head out to places like Beattyville, support that tourist industry. But of course, that's not a year-round industry. So, you know, even if you have a job working in that market, it's not a year-round job. And that's very hard, especially for working families that, you know, are really struggling to get by. As costs go up, wages go down, the dollar becomes worth less. And this is a community that really is kind of an avatar of a lot of what we see in white working class communities, you know, really around the country. So we went out to engage this community again. And it's always great to be able to see when you're door knocking, when people take your literature, say, oh, I remember you. My mom saw the leaflet you left for her. You know, my uncle talked to you guys a few weeks ago. So making those inroads in the community, I think, is so important because it builds that trust where people see we don't just fly in there, drop some flyers, run away. We're building a presence within that community. We're knocking on the doors. We're engaging. We're finding out the concerns that people have. So when we post candidates in 2018 in that region, people know and trust us. And it's so important. But Jason, I want to turn the mic over to you because this is the, you know, you're here in Southern Indiana, come from New York. But this is really the first time you got to see real Appalachia. You know, and what I mean by that is the communities and the hills and hollers, you know, are people, strong people, hardworking people, family-oriented people that have been crushed under this globalist boot heel. So I just kind of want to ask, and if you could tell our listeners, what your initial thoughts were about going and meeting with a lot of these folks, knocking on their doors, sitting and talking with them. What was your takeaway? What was your feelings?
Well, considering that this was the, you know, one of the most poverty-stricken towns in the U.S., it was surprisingly homey, mm-hmm. you know, because when you generally, and I think the Brits thought this too, was that when you go into a poor area, you need to be on guard and that it's going to be dangerous. But these were people who were genuine. They were open and receptive to our message because it's their message.
Yep.
You know, it's their voice that is not getting out. And when we went in there, you know, offering them that voice, you could see there was, you know, there was a movement inside of them.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it was a funny thing, of course, how the media always works. So I much prefer community engagement where, you know, cameras aren't ended up getting shoved in people's faces. It's a lot easier. And, of course, the media is very hostile. I mean, that's the way it always works. And you know, after we would talk with folks, engage with them, usually the reporters would try and run up and, you know, try and throw as many buzzwords as they humanly could. So I'll look forward to seeing what that final cut looks like. You know, neo-Nazi, white nationalist, It's premise. And it was amazing, person after person. If basically, if they actually air the story, which we'll see, because you know the BBC last year famously filmed with us for weeks and then decided they couldn't make a fascist propaganda film because all the people in you know the rural communities we're working in were very supportive of us. You know, they might not agree with all of our ideology, but they see the corruption of the political system, and they know as white working class families that they've been left behind, that they're actively under attack, and they want someone to advocate for them. So they don't have to agree with us on 100% of everything, but they understand the sincerity that we're fighting for them. And of course, the BBC canceled that documentary. so we'll have to see if they end up showing a role. You know, I don't even know if they really found someone to disagree with us.
They didn't. They didn't. They couldn't find a single person to disagree with us because, you know, it's as I said, we're speaking on their behalf because no one clearly is listening to them.
Yeah, I think I think the worst they were able to come up with is someone saying, "Well, I don't know about all that, but I do know that I like their message." So yeah. you know when the least supportive message is still supportive that you're that the things are going pretty well. But you know, it's really the human element. And this is something that I think is so important, and our movement, this includes myself, I think we have in some ways failed our communities where we get caught up in the movement. And the movement becomes, even if you're trying to unite groups and things like that, it becomes a subculture in and of itself. And it's an important thing to have that unity, that shared purpose, that shared subculture. But we can never become disconnected, especially from the white working fast families we want to speak for, because at the end of the day, this is about them. It isn't about us. It's not about organizations. It's not about the party. It's about our families and our children. And we can never ghettoize ourselves, especially in this age where we're reaching more people ever before, as we see with Donald Trump, we see with our own websites, our own shows, just like this one, reaching whole new audiences. We can't only focus on subcultural, you know, really focuses. We have to be focused on our families. And I mean, tell us a little bit about, not to get too sappy here, but kind of the emotional feeling, because it's something that I felt too, and we talked about when we were on our way home. What were your emotions about actually getting to really see our families, the ones that we talk about, we write about, but I mean, really engaging them in that really personal way, I think just gives it so much more meaning and so much more purpose as to what we're doing, because this isn't statistics. This isn't ideology. These are people's lives.
Yeah. I'm not going to be able to articulate any way in that I felt, but it was definitely surreal. It was something very deep. And for anyone who is, you know, sort of questioning about the need, the crucial need for unity in our movement to get things going for these people, should really take a trip out to these places and actually get a close-up front row seat for what you're fighting for, because that, I think, is the epitome of what we're fighting for.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's it really is people's lives. And the reporters, you know, it's a funny thing. I mean, they always start, it was interesting to see the questioning, because the question in the beginning was very generic. I mean, we've done interviews before, very generic stuff, talking about, you know, Donald Trump and ideology and stuff like that. And I saw the questioning. I mean, I'm not going to say that we converted them or anything like that. But as we're knocking doors and they're hearing the stories, they're hearing the testimonies, they're seeing the conditions that our people are in, where, you know, men are talking about that they lost their job and there aren't any other jobs. You know, they're talking about how if they do have jobs, the husband and the wife are working, just barely able to make ends meet, you know, in trailers. And you know, these are people that are justifiably proud. There are people. They're the settlers. They're the pioneers. This is their land. And they're not going to allow Jewish policies and capitalist exploitation to drive them off of their land, that they are going to make their land great again. And this isn't the idea of they don't need a handout. They need a hand up. They need to be empowered. They need to realize the power they have within themselves to make this change, to fight against this unjust economy, to get jobs with justice, to get health care, to get infrastructure investment, and to keep their communities homogenous and safe. I mean, you're talking about that it was homey, and I agree. I mean, it's something that's so touching to me, I mean, as a community organizer, to you know, to knock on the door of, there's really no way to say other than a shack, of, you know, and someone, you know, I met, you know, yesterday, an old woman who, you know, was on oxygen and her husband had passed away. He was a coal miner, and being invited in for a cup of tea when they have nothing to give. But when there's a stranger who's there, they're so generous and so warm. And that's such a beautiful thing of our people. And this needs to be preserved. And these people have been crushed. Our communities and our families have been crushed by these Jewish policies, by these oligarchs. They're waging war against our people. But our people haven't lost the essence of who they are, of being kind and hardworking and loving. And that's such a beautiful thing, I think. I mean, everyone was so friendly to us and kind and accepting. Let's talk just a little bit about that. Your thoughts on just how we were treated, because you're a city boy from New York, and you know I don't have an Appalachian accent. I've got a generic American accent, unfortunately. But everyone, even telling that we weren't from specifically that community, was so warm to us. Just give me your thoughts about comparing the community aspect of New York City versus what you experienced in the trailer parks and hollers of Beattyville.
Well, there's no community aspect in New York City, not for me at least. Because you're one little white speck in all of this. Not white specks. when I went there to that town in Kentucky, I thought, you know, that maybe they were going to treat me a little, you know, not as one of their own, because I have a very clear New York City accent, and I would sense that there would be some kind of aversion to that there, but there really wasn't. Mm-hmm. No one actually asked me about it.
Yeah.
And they just spoke to me respectfully, and it was completely, I was taken aback by it.
Well, I mean, it's that warmth, it's that community, and at the end of the day, they treated us like family, because we are family. I mean, we are an extended family, and as nationalists, I think it's such a powerful thing. And again, you know, I just encourage all of my listeners to really engage the human aspect of this. It can be very easy. I mean, I know the rat race of this life. I know you get busy, and again, I know we get caught up in our subcultures, but community engagement is so important, because these are our people. These are our brothers and our sisters, and we need to treat them like family. We need to view them like family. They're not statistics. They're not, you know, talking points. They're people. They are our brothers and our sisters. They are the ones that we are fighting for, because we are them. We are the white working class. We are the people that are going to have a better future through working and banding together. So this comes in, you know, I think really beautifully with what we were talking about in the first part of the show, with the idea of our movement coming together. Because all these different organizations, of course, you know, in white nationalism, there's definitely not a lot of money. There's a lot of dedicated folks, not a lot of money and resources. All of us are volunteers in one capacity or another. But us being stronger together will allow us to accomplish so much more in organizing our families. You actually said something that I thought was really powerful when we were there, about, you know, people ask, well, how can we recruit for the movement and do stuff like that? And you said, this is an army. We're surrounded by an army of people. This is an army for our cause, an army politically, socially, economically, that is ready to be organized. They're ready to be mobilized to fight for their best interests, because it's, again, not about ideology. It's about their kids. And, you know, as we were sitting there in one of the trailer parks yesterday, and I was watching a couple of young girls, they couldn't have been older than 10 or 11, on their bicycles, and looking and thinking, what is their future going to be? And the decision is going to be, it's either going to be a bright future if we win, or it's going to be a very grim future if we lose. And we're going to see situations getting worse for our communities. Not to get too much into your personal stuff, but and what'd you think on that? When we were watching those girls as they were biking, and the idea that it's it's an army of people waiting for us.
Yeah, watching the girls going by on their bike, you know, I got flashes of my little sister. I got flashes of your baby, and you know, just what are, like you said, what kind of world are we leaving for them here? And I sense that their parents are thinking the exact same thing. Their older brothers are thinking the exact same thing. And they're going to be that army one, you know, and they just need that window. You know, they need that window to peep through, and I think we really provide that.
Well, and you know, the British reporter actually said, she said that they're weary, because she was talking to people and talking to people, and you just see kind of in her face things change as she was talking to more and more people, that they're weary. They're not broken. They're not broken. After everything that's been levied against our communities, they're not broken. But they're tired because they know of the corruption. They know the political class is against them. And, you know, most of them might not know about that it's the Jews pulling the strings, but they know that the political system hates them. They know that they're spit on. They know that they're the last ones to ever get access to infrastructure investment or jobs or new opportunities. They see that the refugees or the illegal immigrants get better treatment than people who have been here in this country for 300 years. Their families, the ones who built this country, the coal miners that kept our lights on, that allowed us to build the infrastructure that we have, they've been left behind, and they know this. So, you know, you look at low voter turnout in these regions, it's not because these people aren't intelligent, it's not because they aren't engaged, it's because they see no difference between the Wall Street approved parties. Those with the kosher stamp, the Republicans and the Democrat, have done nothing for them. The war on poverty was launched two generations ago in Kentucky, and things have not gotten better. I was just watching or reading a statistic that children in East Kentucky, close to 50% of them have inadequate dental care. Healthcare is down. You're more likely to die by suicide or accidental drug overdose in that region than anywhere else in the country. You're looking at a 10-year shorter life expectancy than the posh white and Jewish suburbs of Washington, D.C., and the hollers of West Virginia and Kentucky. So these communities know they're not broken. They're weary, and they're waiting. They're tired of this burden they've been had to carry. They want a brighter future, and that's something that we can do to empower them. It's not about us ordering them. It's about us being a part of that community, empowering that community, organizing that community, and fighting for that community, because we are part of their future and they are part of ours. That's what an extended family is. So I think that's really important. And as we're kind of coming to the last few minutes of the show, I want to kick it back to you, Jason, to what would you tell our listeners really about this idea of understanding the family aspect of our white working class communities? Because it's not just Appalachia. I talk about Appalachia a lot, but I've been in communities in Idaho and Montana and North Dakota that feel the same way. I've been in communities in the South that they have some of the best farmland on the planet, but the fields are sitting fallow. They're not being used. That these communities are falling apart. So this is not just an Appalachian problem. It's a white working and lower middle class problem. So what would you say to our listeners about the family aspect of this?
That's our future. that's the thick and thin of it, man. That's our future. You're playing around with our future when you're not taking a stand against all the things that are attacking it. You're messing around. It's not playtime. It's not time to have your little clubs and pretend that this is a game. It's not a game. Yeah. Our whole future is here, and that, like, we really, really have to get in gear with it.
Well, and that's one thing that it can become easy to really identify as, it being a social movement where you have your friends or your symbols and things like that. And that's great. I love that. That's community building on the local level. That's the tribal building. Great stuff. But this, like you said, is the future of our people, and our people's future depends on us, that we can no longer be divided. And it's not just about getting the movement on the same page. It's about translating that unity into real action. It's about organizing. We need to be organizing the unemployed. We need to be organizing the underemployed. We need to be organizing our families to fight for this future, because this is all linked together, that we can't just be revolving around subcultural norms of what the traditionalist white nationalist movement has been doing. What we need to be doing is getting into our communities. The Traditionalist Worker Party is doing a great job at that. I'm honored to be the chairman of this party with so many great men and women. But we as a movement need to be oriented on community organization. And that's why I'm proposing for 2017, as we're coming to the end of the year here. In 2017, we need to primarily focus everything we do on community organizing. Knocking on doors, soup kitchens, coat drives, picketing businesses that are hiring illegal immigrants and shutting out white working class men from those positions, that everything we do has to be oriented on advocating for our community and organizing our community. So that's what I'm proposing for the movement. That's what the Nationalist Front is going to be doing. White nationalism, as usual in America, is not what's going to be happening. We're growing. but we're going to become more community focused. So, Jason, give us a final thought for the day.
Final thought. Join the Nationalist Front. We're going to get this done.
Exactly. It's an exciting thing. Whatever group or crew you're a part of, look forward to that. Again, Harrisburg on November 5th. Jeff Scoop will be with me later this week. If you're interested in being involved politically, Traditionalist Worker Party at tradworker.org. We'd love to have you on board. And comrades, remember, these are our people. Not statistics, not talking points, but our brothers and our sisters. And the future of these children and the future of our blood and our culture is dependent upon us today to organize, mobilize, and activate these communities to fight for their best interests. So it's an exciting time. There's a lot of work to do, but I look forward to seeing a whole host of you in Harrisburg, and also looking forward to work within 2017. But we are going to organize our communities. The white working class is finally going to have a voice, and we are going to be victorious. So thank you guys so much. Thank you, Jason, for being here. Have a great rest of your day, ladies and gentlemen. Hail victory.
Be tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.